This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Friends, and welcome to this, an on-location episode.
A special edition.
Of the Roto-World Football Podcast, as always. My name is Josh Norris. His name is John Daigle.
Sitting kind of far than the normal studios, right?
Like, do you want to be closer to me, here. Daigle? Is this what you're saying?
Actually, I'm good. I'm going to stay
right here. We
haven't
spent enough time with each other over the past, what, 3 days?
We're basically, isn't your room on my floor? No,
nope.
You're in a different one. Okay.
Yep. I asked for that specifically.
I'm sure you did. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
How you doing, man?
Everything's doing wonderful. We actually had not only the room miscommunication, there was a tad more miscommunication on the way out here because we discussed getting on the same flight together on the way to Miami.
This was not a discussion, Daigle. This is what happened. You said, hey, what
flights
did you book?
I want to hear your form of it.
I took a screenshot of said flights.
Yeah.
Texted them to you,
yep.
Said, okay, next let's line up a car to the airport because living in Connecticut, it takes an hour and a half to get there.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the day before, Daigle, you tell me, oh, actually, I'm on a different flight than you.
And I didn't realize until I booked the car. Had I not.
How do you not realize this? First of all, it has the flight number on there. It has, you went to a different airport. I'm JFK.
Yep.
You're LaGuardia.
Yep.
This, I have
all
a theory.
Out.
This was not a mistake. This was of your own decision and of own doing.
I assure you, I did not want to wake up at 6 a.m. for a flight Sunday. It just happened. I was trying to get on the same flight for you, and if our lovely production assistant, Lauren, had not told me beforehand, hey, you're not going to this airport, and you're not on this flight, I assure you, I would have shown up with you. I literally would have shown up with you.
Your aim is awful.
Complete mistake, yeah. This is what happens when you leave me to my own devices.
I mean, it's such a mistake that I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way back, we're flying to different airports. It says JFK.
Don't we land in the same airport?
No, dude. You're on LaGuardia.
Oh, I'm going to a different one?
Yes.
That was not planned. I had no idea. I just kind of show up. It's fine. It's gonna be okay.
John Daigle, I have no idea. I think that's the perfect lesson that we have learned
John
from
John Daigle,
arrangers.
It'll be fine. I think that's the title of my biography.
We are down here all week in Miami, lining up a bunch of interviews. On this episode, actually, we have Jerome Bettis coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Danny Kelly of The Ringer. We have Will Brinson of CBS Sports, also Matt Harmon of Yahoo Sports, and then Bob Sturm from The Athletic covering the Dallas Cowboys.
Episode.
About 8 to 10 to 12 minutes with each one. They were awesome discussions.
Yep.
Definitely tune in to the Jerome Bettis one, which is actually coming up right now. Now on the set, Jerome Bettis, a Super Bowl champion, Walter Payton Man of the Year, and NFL Hall of Famer. Jerome, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
Jerome, before we get started, let's talk about NuVasive and your health.
Well, you know, actually, they go hand in hand. When I retired, I was a little beat up, but I didn't really realize it until I started to, you know, play with my little kids, and I was playing golf a lot. And then I started to realize that physically, I was having problems.
Yep.
And I started to do some research, and I needed a fusion on my back, and so it was a serious surgery. So I started to do my homework, and I found really the right surgery first, and the surgery is called the XLIF surgery. And then I found the right surgeon, which was a doctor named Dr. Uribe, and one of the best in the world. And from there, I was able to then assess everything. Had the surgery. A lot of people say it's an 8-month surgery. I was recovered well in 3 months. Back to my quality of life and playing golf and all of those things. And if anybody wants to kind of see or hear or read about my story, they can go to nuvasive.com/thebus. And I really lay it out for people that are maybe in a similar situation, questioning about their health.
Yeah.
And they want to look at it.
And if anyone asked, your golf game obviously got better.
My golf game did get better.
I believe you.
It
I
did, because I was slapping it around.
I believe you.
Now I'm turning on it.
You feel good.
I'll fight somebody on the golf course.
Jerome, let's hop in the time machine here. I'm sure you get asked a lot about certain games. I want to take you back to week one of the 2004 season, because this is one of those historic days in my mind. Your stat line for that day, 5 carries, 1 yard, 3 touchdowns. I mean, that's magnificent.
Greatest line ever.
That might be the greatest. That couldn't have been the game plan for you just to have that stat line exiting game, I believe, against the Oakland Raiders, 24-21.
Yeah, that wasn't the plan, but that's kind of the way it happened. It was one of those, I was a goal line back at the time, and I scored a couple times. Then there was one play that I took a big loss. So that's kind of, people were scratching their head like, how is that possible? But I had a loss play, which was very rare for me. I'm not a going backwards kind of guy, right? But it was a pretty neat stat line afterwards.
I know you're a veteran on that team, but any of the guys rib you in the locker room for that stat line?
You know what? Nobody really noticed it until, a couple weeks later, the national media made a point of saying, how crazy is this stat line? And then my teammates were like, man, come on, man.
You scored 18 points for them. They didn't have complaints.
It wasn't the points. They're saying, man, you're too big to get 1 yard in the game, man. Come on, man. So that I took a little heat for only getting 1 yard.
At the end of that season, though, you actually toyed with the idea of retirement. Who approached you and what made you come back?
Well, actually, it really wasn't anyone approaching me as much as, after the season ended, Coach Cowher told me, hey, don't make such a harsh decision after such a big loss. You know, we were 15-1 that year. We lost to the Patriots in the championship, and it was heartbreaking. And so I got away from it and decided, after a couple guys on my team reminded me that the Super Bowl was in my hometown of Detroit, that it'd be a shame if I missed it. Hmm. And as it turns out, they were correct. It would have been a shame.
Was there one teammate in particular?
Larry Foote was one. Mm-hmm. Clark Hagans. Those were the two guys that really were aggressive. And at the Pro Bowl, a lot of guys that year, because we were 15-1, I think we had 8 guys in a Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
And those 8 guys brought a couple other guys with them. So we maybe had 15 to 20 guys. And the coaching staff was the coaching staff for the Pro Bowl. So we had the coaching staff, about 20 players, and the owners. And so they threw a big luau, and the guys came up, and everybody was trying to get me to stay, but these guys said the right words. They said, hey, man, Super Bowl's in Detroit next year, because Larry Foote is from Detroit as well. And so he reminded me, and then Clark, kind of poured it on. And at that point, I was sold.
So they poke at you for rushing for a yard, and then they ask you to come back.
They punished me.
But it worked.
Right.
Yeah.
It worked. And, I've got a ring to show for it.
There you obviously go. Well, we're talking about the end there. Let's go back to the beginning. And this shocked me, because I read that you didn't play organized football until high school. And before that, you were the master of street football. There must have been a moment just playing the street with your friends that you realized, okay, I'm pretty good at this. My size is, adequate. I should try out for the team.
Yeah, there was a time, I think I was about 13 to 14, and I was playing against my brother's friends, and my brother's 4 years older than me. So they were all 17 and 18 years old. And I hit one guy literally, and he flew into the fence of a house, and and he went underneath the fence.
Underneath?
Yeah, the fence was moving a little rickety. I hit him so hard, he kind of rolled into the fence and went right underneath it. The fence buckled, and he went underneath the fence. And that's when I started to think about it, and the guys on the street were like, look, man, you need to play football.
You say it like it's no big deal, Jerome. Like, you put someone through a fence.
It was, I didn't at the time,
it wasn't out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but when I look back at it, it was a bit strange to put somebody through a fence.
He tells his friends that story his entire life.
I don't think he does. I don't think that's something you want to tell somebody. Yeah, Jerome Bettis put me through a fence.
They didn't add fences in that time, but the game has obviously changed so much since you played. Is there any running backs right now that stand out to you that are exceptional?
Yeah, I mean, Saquon Barkley, you see him, mm-hmm. he is impressive in every way imaginable. Ezekiel Elliott, you look at him, outstanding. I mean, Ty Gurley, he's still incredible running back. The problem with Ty Gurley this past year, everybody wanted to believe and think that he was hurt from last year. He was not. It was just they changed the emphasis and they wanted to throw the ball with more with Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. And then they realized late in the season that, we need to get back to running the football. And then you saw the running back that we've all seen from Gurley the last few years. And so I think Derrick Henry's special. You saw with the run he put on Mark Ingram. I'm a big fan of Mark.
Do you kind of drift towards backs that show that power rather than, I know you mentioned Saquon, and he has a lot of elusiveness with that power, but do you ever drift towards people and players of your own style or more towards the guys who can win out in space?
So I prided myself in being able to win in space a little bit as well, because I wanted always to be a little shifty, but with my size, it was it's kind of an oxymoron. Right. Well, I was an easy target too. But I do look at a guy like Christian McCaffrey. Yeah. I mean, how special he is. So I'm conscious of those guys, but obviously my eye is going to always gravitate to a guy who's going to lower his shoulder and maybe run over a guy as opposed to run around a guy or make a guy miss. If you will.
You mentioned your size. How does your workout training regimen actually change now that you don't play anymore?
Well, for me, it's not as much about lifting as much as cardio. So I'm all, trying to ride the bike, get a Stairmaster, treadmill, those kind of things. The things I dread the most as opposed to a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Right now, it's not about, staying at a certain strength threshold. I want to stay physically strong, but not the way I was training when I was playing.
Before we let you go, Jerome, we haven't asked you about the game at all. Can we play a little game?
Yeah, let's
Daigle do it. Stole this from someone at the beach. So
okay.
We just choose
kid,
one of these.
Actually.
A kid? Okay.
And answer the question that's in there.
Uh-oh.
It's about the game on Sunday. Can you
no
read that
hard
loud,
question.
Too?
Ooh, what position will win Super Bowl MVP, quarterback or other? Wow. It's a great question. And actually, I've been giving that question some thought because a few years ago, I was able to pick it, and so I've been kind of doing it every year. I'm terribly incorrect for the most part.
We all are. That's what this show is.
Of course. But I'm saying right now, obviously, with the quarterbacks that you have, the big-name quarterbacks, the assumption is that a quarterback is going to win it. But I think if I had to put it on somebody, I'd probably put it on the edge rusher.
Uh-huh. Nick Bosa?
Chris Jones?
Yeah, somewhere like that could be.
Interesting.
I honestly thought you would say running back.
Frank Clark from Kansas City. I think he would have a shot at it. I think whoever is able to disrupt the quarterback, I think they'll win it. That's my on the wing.
Jerome Bettis suggesting possibly a defensive performance on Sunday. Not many people are saying that. Jerome, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank
I really
you. Appreciate it, guys.
Now on the set is Washington Redskins insider for NBC Sports Network. Washington, that is JP Finley.
What's up, fellas? Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. JP, it's been a quiet offseason in Ashburn.
Quiet's one word, probably the opposite of that, but certainly it's, I'll say this, as a reporter, it's been nice that everything happened fast. You know, you have these long searches, what the Giants went through, the Browns still trying to figure out coordinators and stuff. The Skins, they ripped the Band-Aid off Allen era.
Well, it seemed like they just took three moving trucks from Charlotte and just carried them on up there to Washington.
Yeah, it's not that bad of a drive. You know, 5-6 hours, they were probably fine.
From the outside, all that we hear was how much of an impact it's going to be that Bruce Allen is no longer part of this organization. That Ron Rivera was perhaps brought in to change the culture and the identity. From someone that is much closer to it, how realistic is that? And is that the correct perception?
If it's possible, you're understating how huge it is that Bruce Allen has gone from this organization. His hands were in everything, and it's hard to, it's kind of hard to explain what his reach was and just the scope of all of it. So his removal also means a lot about Dan Snyder's evolution as an owner, because Dan and Bruce were tight. There's no secret about that. But late in the year, you saw what looked like that relationship was fracturing. And I think no matter what happens with Ron Rivera, he can come in and win 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. He could be there for 4 years and not make the playoffs. It's already a tremendous step forward for the Redskins organization.
What's the first step, though, as they continue to rebuild this organization, as you said, literally from the top down?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's kind of about personnel and what happens on the field going forward, because you've got your head coach. They promoted Kyle Smith to the VP of player personnel, which is going to be there.
Tell us about him.
Kyle is a really sharp football mind. He's been running college scouting for the Skins for the past few years. In Ron Rivera's introductory presser, he said one of the reasons he liked this job is because of the last 3 draft classes. No coincidence, those are the 3 that Kyle Smith has run. Mm-hmm. And they've found some players. I mean, Terry McLaurin in the 3rd round, mm-hmm. A guy like Cole Holcomb last year had a lot of tackles. The drafts have been impressive. They have some young talent on this team on cheap rookie deals. It also helps. If you look at you joked about the moving trucks from Charlotte.
Yeah.
Ron has looked to guys that he has familiarity with, and he named Scott Turner as his offensive coordinator, who worked for him with the Panthers. Scott Turner's dad is Norv Turner. Norv Turner was the head coach of the then San Diego Chargers. Ron Rivera was defensive coordinator. The GM of that team was A.J. Smith, Kyle Smith's son.
Huh.
So it's all connected.
It's funny.
A lot of that.
Out of college, I applied for jobs with the Panthers. This is no surprise to anyone here.
But not a fan.
Got all the way to like interviewing with the team president. And the line that he told me, it must have been like a Panthers line, is you need to find people that know that you're going to do a good job and they will hire you. And that certainly seems like this is the case with Ron Rivera and his coaching staff. Quickly moving over to the players, you know, we saw Dwayne Haskins for about half a season, a little bit more. I still don't know if I know who Dwayne Haskins is as an NFL player. Is that fair?
Yeah. And I don't know that this new staff, I don't know that Ron Rivera or Scott Turner know who he is. You can point to his last 6 quarters of football. It was a start against the Eagles and then 2 quarters against the Giants that were really, really good. He was completing more than 70% of his passes. This is 6 quarters. He had 400 yards passing. I think he had 3 touchdowns, no picks. He looked to finally have it. He looked like the kid at Ohio State that threw for 50 touchdowns. But the games before that, it was pretty ugly. The relief appearances early in the year before Jay Gruden got fired, awful. There's some discussion around how much coaching, how much direction, really even how much attention Dwayne Haskins got early on in the year, going all the way back to training camp. It wasn't a lot. Jay Gruden was a coach that knew he had to win in 2019. Dwayne Haskins was not going to help him win. It was the Redskins organizationally had so many competing agendas.
Yeah.
They had a head coach. This is 2019. They had a head coach in a win or bust season, and then a front office that was trying to develop a long-term quarterback. I mean, those two things are just at odds with one another, and Haskins was kind of in the middle of that. Going forward, Scott Turner is supposed to be the guy for Dwayne. And you look what he did with Cam Newton in Carolina. You look what he did with Teddy Bridgewater in Minnesota before that big injury. People believe he can develop quarterbacks. Ron Rivera and Scott Turner, though, have publicly said, Dwayne, you need to be a leader. You need to be first one in, last one out. Last year, that wasn't always the case. There was a lot of growing up for Dwayne Haskins as a rookie. And he seemed to be starting to understand what it took to be a pro quarterback by the end of the year. Then he had the ankle injury. You know, they shut him down for week 17. But they've got a couple months now before free agency and then the draft to figure out, this is our guy. Do we need to bring a veteran in? Yeah. Alex Smith's still making $21 million bucks this year, guaranteed. So he's going to be on the books. I don't think he's going to be on the field, but it's an evolving situation there.
I actually wanted to talk to you about some of those free agents and where the organization sits on some, because as you already know, a lot of guys could walk, a lot of important players. Brandon Scherff, you have Vernon Davis, Adrian Peterson, Chris Thompson, Tony Bergstrom, the list goes on and on. So what do you think, like, are there any leans right now on particular players like that?
Like, they can't lose a player like Brandon Scherff,
right?
Can they?
I don't think so. And I think now that, because you got to, it's, Bruce Allen was fairly tight-fisted with the cash. He let people walk, and he believed in the compensatory formula. If you look at what the Panthers did, and you know this, you're a fan of the team, they are, they were willing to pay big money for a guard. And that's kind of what you're going to have.
Trey Turner.
Right. That's what you're going to have to do to keep Brandon Scherff.
Yeah.
So maybe the new organization understands, and Rob Rogers is their contract guy now. He was with Ron down in Carolina. It's entirely possible that the Scherff negotiations change immediately because it's a new staff looking at him. Because I think with Bruce, you saw reluctance to go to the top of the market, and you can point to Kirk Cousins as the prime example. They didn't want to pay Kirk the top of the market because he wasn't the best, or really even top three. Scherff, I think you can easily argue, is top three and is worth that money. I'm much more optimistic about his deal now than I was prior to the changes. A guy like Chris Thompson is going to go and be a really good third down back somewhere else, yeah. I think. AP, there's a team option. I think they'd be crazy not to bring him back.
Yeah.
The biggest question for the Skins are guys they can release or trade. Josh Norman's making $15 million a right. year and was getting benched
and
late last
season. It was funny because he was a little optimistic after Ron was hired that, like, oh, this might be a new chance at a new start. Doesn't seem like it based on how he played.
Ron was also with the Panthers when they rescinded right. the franchise tag.
That was more of a Dave Gettleman thing, possibly.
Sure, right.
Possibly. JP, I've noticed that you just completely milk your ISO. You are a pro at all this, but you haven't forever been in the media. When I say SNL Financial Energy Reporter,
this is what you think of?
What memories does that bring
Is that
up?
On my LinkedIn page? Where are you finding this?
I have it up right now.
We went digging. Yeah.
I was awful at that, I'll be honest.
What is it? What is an energy reporter?
I reported on
energy
electrical transmission. So like from the power plant to the city, like the giant wires that get it back and forth. That process is however complicated you think the NFL draft is or scouting players yeah. or installing your third down offense. I couldn't wrap my head around that whatsoever. I had that job maybe 10 months.
Oh, well, you listed it as a year and six months, so you might be over-exaggerating
here. Or lying, and we just called him out.
Yeah, I think there's no way it was 18 months.
For five more months after that?
Well, I had, you know, way back when at Comcast Sportsnet, I couldn't present myself as jobless.
Correct.
So I just kind of, like, extended that. I was a... I'll be honest here. I was a very bad energy reporter.
But then you, like, transitioned into the newsroom at NBC Sports.
I was, like, a manager for a little while.
Yeah, so how did you go from managing people in the newsroom as a producer to then jumping into an insider role in front of the camera?
This I can explain better. So, for me, I when I got to what was then CSN, I was in kind of the grunt level where you kind of do everything. You're writing, you're running the desk, you're running social, and I was pretty good at all that. And then I assumed some leadership, you know, assignments along the way, and I was on like a cool management track, I would say. Maybe I end up in Stamford, Connecticut
one day. To a glass office.
I had an office, dude.
Look at
you. It was small.
And now you're sitting here with us.
It was quite small. It was like half of this desk, but it had a door. But I had always told my bosses, so all along, even as like I started having more and more on my plate with other stuff, I always was covering the Skins. Like that has just been a passion since I was a kid, right? I grew up there. That is, even how bad they are the team of record in D.C.
Right.
And I always told my boss, hey, if this one job opens, that's what will get me to switch back. And that was wishful thinking. I didn't know that I would get it. But sure enough, you remember Tariq El-Bashir?
Yeah.
So Tariq was a hockey
Capitals,
guy a long time. Yeah. Right. He was covering the Skins for us. He wanted to get back to hockey. He switched back to hockey. That job opened up, and I went
pounced.
Pushed all my chips in.
Wow.
Was able to get it. A couple people took a chance because I didn't have any real TV chops. I had done some fantasy stuff.
You weren't on TV reporting energy?
No,
what you're
dude.
Saying? Okay.
Everyone would fall asleep.
Yeah.
Everyone.
We haven't asked you at all about the game on Sunday. We're going to close out with a little game of our own.
This is fun.
You snuck a peek at the pail when you arrived, by the way.
I have no idea what this is.
From a crying kid on the beach. So we need you to pull one of these and answer the question. Cool?
All right. I'm going to not look.
There we go, JP. Read it out loud if you could for us.
How many times will Fox compare Favre and Mahomes?
Yes.
Is that the natural comp for Mahomes?
I think Mahomes
is so much more accurate.
He is.
He doesn't throw the picks.
And mobile and all that.
Yeah. maybe it's the evolution of Favre.
If it's not Favre, then if it's not Favre, then who would be your alternate? Who do you think he'll be compared to the most on Sunday?
Yeah, who do you think when you think Patrick Mahomes, or is he just that unique that you don't think of anyone?
The Titans version of Mahomes we saw.
Uh-huh.
I would kind of go Steve Young when he's running like that.
Yeah.
And I think Steve Young was a more accurate passer, but that was a different era where completion percentages were different.
Sure.
I don't know that there is a comp for Mahomes. I am sure they'll make – how many times are they going to make that?
At least three.
I was going to say three. Three would be my over-under, and I'd probably – like if you set it at 3.5, it'd get real interesting. Who's your comp for him?
Favre. I would say like that's the natural one, but – He's just so unique that off-platform throws, out of structure, just
dude, the sidearm
at Texas Tech was unbelievable. It was so wild.
And remember, his last year he played with like a zombie arm too. He was hurt the entire season. I don't know if it's Favre, but they're going to make the Montana comparisons just because the
for
scenario.
Sure.
Yeah.
And maybe Young too then.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess it's the KC side, right?
We just completely forget that he dislocated his kneecap this season. It's amazing.
We were just talking to Peter King, and he told me a story that Mahomes dislocated his kneecap, and then the next day at the facility, he's doing full sprints in the hydrotherapy pool because they told him it's not that bad. It's 4 to 6 weeks, and his mindset was, no, it's going to be 1 week.
Wow. Wow. That is JP Finley. Thanks so much for joining us, JP.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
It, buddy.
Appreciate it, guys.
Joined to the desk now, staff writer at The Ringer, Danny Kelly himself. Danny, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent. How are you guys doing?
We're great. How's a West Coaster do when traveling to the East Coast and having to do a lot of media obligations?
It's a little bit weird. Obviously, the clock, the internal clock is a little bit off still since I'm on West Coast time. But I was in Mobile last week, so it was a little bit of an acclimation for me.
Got accustomed to it, yeah.
Yeah, and then I drove here like a lunatic.
Did you really?
It was an 11-hour
drive. You went straight from Mobile to here?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Did you plan that out in your head? Did you look at it, Google Maps? You're like, oh, you know,
it's
Alabama
ten
and Miami, you know, one state over.
Yeah.
Yet it turns out to be an 11-hour drive.
The flight time, total like travel time, was going to be like 8 hours because I had to connect in Charlotte or something. Mm-hmm. And so now I was just going to drive.
What does Danny Kelly do on an 11-hour drive? By
just
himself?
Listen to podcasts the whole time.
Hours?
Yeah.
Thank you.
What was the highlight, by the way, of the drive? 11 hours. You had to see something exciting.
That's really tough. To be honest with you, I wouldn't do it again. It probably wasn't that great.
As someone that drove once from Tampa to Mobile, the Floribama Shore is an interesting place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
I think the driving took a significant dip once you get into Florida.
Yes.
The fellow drivers, I should say. I would say the best part was probably going through Jacksonville. There was like a nice little bridge over there. You know, it was like pretty. Otherwise, it was just pretty flat.
So nothing,
you couldn't
it's
see
okay.
anything.
Nothing interesting.
It's all good.
Why don't we jump into some football?
Yeah.
You want to do that?
Sure, let's do it.
You know the Seattle Seahawks very, very well. Spent a lot of time at field goals. I'll leave this question open and that we can go detailed after that.
Sure.
If you were the GM for a day of Seattle, if you took John Schneider's job for one day, what would be your first move?
Ooh, that's a good question. I keep adding receiver weapons. I mean, and philosophically, like, I think the Seahawks just differ from a lot of Seahawks fans in terms of, like, their priorities. Obviously, they're a very run-oriented team, smash-mouth, physical. They want to be really balanced all the time. I'm trying to put weapons around Russell Wilson. And I don't know if you guys heard, but Russell Wilson was recently sort of sub-tweeting the Seahawks. Like,
was he really?
Yeah, he tweeted something, like, something along the lines of, great to see Mahomes balling and his weapons are balling too. And it's like everyone's like, okay, we need to get him some more guys. I mean, obviously getting DK Metcalf was a huge, huge thing for him. Tyler Lockett, you know, is a very good receiver too. But I think if you add a couple more weapons around him, I think that would be really important, kind of like get them to the next level offensively.
And it's not like they didn't try, right? Like John Ursua, Gary Jennings, like they took their shots.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say
mid-rounders are
we can't
not
talk
gonna...
about John Ursua as like a seventh-round draft pick as even trying.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's still a guy they drafted as a receiver, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Jacob Hollister's not going to cut it either.
Right.
Let's talk about you as a Seattle fan. I mean, you not grew up, but at least in recent memory, have watched incredible defenses. I mean, three, I wouldn't say Hall of Fame secondary pieces, but ones at least are in the Hall of Very Good. And Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and Cam Chancellor, and two of those will probably be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
What's it like to go from that transition to, like, in 2 years now watching a defense that really struggles quite often?
Yeah. And it's tough because Earl Thomas and Sherman are still playing really well in the NFL.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit frustrating. I mean, I think they obviously learned their lesson when they extended Cam Chancellor, gave him a lot of guaranteed money, and then he had a career-ending injury. So I think that spooked them a little bit about giving guys a third contract. So I think every team has a life cycle. The early part of the Seahawks sort of dynasty or whatever you want to call it, not dynasty, but years of being really good or whatever.
Their window to win when it was open.
Right, their championship window. Early on, it was very much defense-oriented. They spent a lot of money there. They had a lot of really good players. And then over the years, now they're giving Russell Wilson a ton of money.
It's his contract once they had to do it.
Yeah, and so it changes the way that you have to construct the roster. Yeah. Now they have to be a little bit cheaper on the defense, I think. You know, they're going to have a decision with Jadeveon Clowney going forward and a couple other guys. But it does make sense to me for them to build on offense, to spend their money on offense. So on one hand, it was definitely frustrating watching that defense kind of go through its growing pains. But on the other hand, you understand it because they can't just pay for a really great elite defense again. And honestly, you know, they're not going to just find these mid-round future Hall of Famers. It just doesn't happen. It was a perfect storm for whatever they figured it out how to do it with those three guys. But that just doesn't happen. So I think there's a element of, like, this is the reality. We understand that you can't just completely remake an all-time great defense.
Yeah.
And so it's been frustrating, but at the same time, you know, you understand it. And that's why I think building towards the offense is the most important thing.
You mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, and that's one of the more interesting subplots of this offseason. But let's take Seattle, push them aside for a second. What is the one thing you're monitoring this offseason? The one storyline you're interested to see play out?
Not aside from Jadeveon?
Aside from Seattle, aside from Clowney.
Oh, aside from the Seahawks in general?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the quarterback.
There are other
situation.
Teams. There are 31 other
what?
Teams in the
yeah,
league.
I don't know if
Danny
you heard.
Kelly.
No. I think the quarterback carousel is going to be the most interesting thing that happens in the offseason. Obviously, there's a report coming out yesterday that Philip Rivers may be done with the Chargers. Where he ends up is going to be super interesting. You know, there's multiple quarterbacks, whether you're talking about Drew Brees.
Tom
Brady's maybe not going to be with the Patriots, which is just kind of unthinkable at this point in time. You know, and then there's a few other guys that could move around. I think quarterbacks have the ability to change the complexion of not only teams, but divisions, the entire conference. So that's going to be huge this offseason. And I think I'm mostly just looking forward to seeing how that all kind of pans out.
Danny, let's talk about you for a moment. I knew some of the people that were going to hop on this set with us. So I did a little deep dive on you. what was life like? Because you had a life before being a football writer. What was life like as a project specialist at Elex?
You're looking at my LinkedIn, huh?
I am.
Okay. It was good. Actually, that company was like a little boutique, I don't even know what to call them, electronic litigation company. They basically helped companies with discovery. So it was like a legal firm. But at the same time, I was paid on project basis. So I had the time to like blog and do Seahawks stuff. That's how I got involved with that. So it was kind of like I had two jobs for a couple of years there. But yeah, that was
which
my
is
life.
How most people, because yeah. I mean, you can't just hop into full-time roles. You were there right. for 8 years, Danny Kelly.
I mean, like, yeah, that towards the end, it was like I would work maybe two days a month or something like that. So it wasn't really like full-time, but
I also did a deep dive on your tweets.
Which is a hole you'd never want
to
go.
I'm going to read some to you, and I just want to get your reaction. Does that work?
Lord. Okay, sure.
Just watch the trailer to Midsommar. And I will not be watching that film. Also, Danny Kelly, not a fan of horror films. Speaking of disturbing movies, I watched The King, and for some reason it messed with me for a week afterwards. I'm
did
not
you
sure
see that?
Why. What's your issue? No, I haven't seen any of these.
I've been told to watch it. I have not watched it yet.
What's your issue with horror films? What did they do to you afterwards?
So I have a specific philosophy on movies. They should entertain me, and I don't like to be stressed out watching a movie. I have enough stress in my life already. I don't want to be stressed while I'm having entertainment. Although, I don't know why I'm a football fan, to be honest, like, or a Seahawks fan. So that doesn't really kind of, like, there's some cognitive dissonance there. I don't know exactly what's going on. But in terms of movies, I definitely don't like horror movies. I hate suspense.
Like, really? That's the only thing I want to watch.
As a cinematic device, suspense annoys me.
Like, even a thriller? That's
well,
considered
no,
jump
like,
scares?
No, thrillers are fine. But, like, when you have scenes.
Tension that builds.
Yeah, like, purposely just inserting like
drama,
it annoys the crap out of me. So basically I'm just not into those kind of movies. I want to be entertained. I want to have
you want
you know,
action
escape you
I
know
gotcha.
From reality. So yeah, The King is a crazy movie though, by the way.
I'll take your word for it. We gotta get out of here. I forgot our little game, so I'm gonna play it for you and ask you this question. Usually we have like this bucket and you draw
pail.
Something
I
out of
it over and stole it.
My mind's already on loop
here,
so I'm
all right.
Already forgot it. Hair is one. Will the 49ers have more passing attempts or rushing attempts on Sunday? What do you think?
passing attempts. And I think it's because the Chiefs' offense will be successful in this game and that they're going to have to try and score a lot of points. I do think they'll be relatively still be balanced, at least for NFL standards. But I bet, I'm guessing that they're going to have to be coming from behind a little bit. And so they're going to have to rely a little bit more on Jimmy Garoppolo.
How do you think that's going to fare for them?
I don't know. I do have faith in Garoppolo. You know, he's made some pretty big throws on, like, third downs and key situations. Mm-hmm. You know, in Week 17, he made a really huge play on a third down that basically sunk the Seahawks. So he has that experience.
Or anything.
Yeah, I'm not like bitter about it. But yeah, I think he's good. Like, he's also the kind of guy who will just go YOLO and throw an interception too. So it really just depends on how his decision making goes. But I think he has it in him. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I do think they're going to have to lean on him a little bit more than they have in the last couple games.
That's Danny Kelly. Go and check out basically his draft guide. It's this crazy database over at The Ringer. It's a wonderful thing. Yes. I'll check it out at least once a week. Joined now by CBS Sports senior NFL writer. His name is Will Brinson. Will, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys. I feel honored to be on the old NBC set over here.
This elevated set that makes us feel more important than everyone else.
Well, and see, you guys are in a good spot, too. You can see the corporate synergy is working well.
Yes.
You have the same set. You're on the same height as PFT, right?
Well, yeah.
As you'll notice, like, they put my show on a smaller set.
Uh-huh. What does that say about us?
It says that you guys are important and I'm not.
That makes us feel better on a certain level, the totem pole that we're on, that I know that we're on. So thank you for saying that.
You guys kill it.
Oh, I appreciate that, Will. I appreciate that. Will, you do a lot of stuff with the Panthers. You cover the Panthers. You live in North Carolina, where I am from originally.
Yeah.
What if I made you general manager of the Panthers for a day? I mean, this is a Panthers team that is going to go through so many changes this offseason. Obviously, new head coach, maybe new quarterback. How would you handle that one day? What would be your first move?
Well, I'm Marty Herney for a day. That sounds
regrettably.
Fun. I like Marty.
Take the senior title away, but yes.
I could be Marty. Look, I think when you look at this roster, what you're seeing with this Panthers team is something that's going to really, I don't want to say disappoint fans in 2020. I would not be surprised if the Panthers tanked in 2020. And even tanked for Trevor, potentially. Hmm. When you listen to what David Tepper has said since he took over, he said, we are going to try and build something long-term. We're going to build something that is sustainable over the course of many years, not just 1 year. And more importantly, he said, fans need to understand that this change to get to where we want to be is not going to happen overnight.
Yep.
Like, it's our job to read between the lines on some of this stuff. And when I hear that, I think, okay, maybe something's going to be a little different. Then when I look at the Panthers roster, I don't know if you, like, I, long story short, I can't really remember why I took a deep dive into it. I was for an article, but I was like going through the salary cap table. This reeks of a tank.
Huh.
There's tons of guys up at the top, like Don Terry Poe, you know, who can be cut for cap reasons.
K1 Short. I mean, these K-1 older
Short.
Players.
K1 Short is quietly like 31. Yep. How did that happen?
Yeah. I think he entered the league when he was 24.
Yeah. He was older when he came in, but like, I mean, you know, there was a combine in 2013 with, you know, him and Starlet Dulele.
Yep.
And so I think there's a lot of older players. Greg Olsen, they don't know what's going to happen. Greg Olsen, I don't think, knows what's going to happen. Cam Newton, they don't know what's going to happen. So to answer your question more directly, I'm trying to find the best possible value for Cam Newton that I can get. And you and I are both on the Cam train.
Yes.
I love Cam. One of my favorite players of all time. The first NFL draft I ever covered for CBS, Panthers at my home, the team I grew up rooting for, had the number one overall pick, and I watched Cam Newton take. I love Cam. I think he's criminally underrated and disparaged in the media, and I can't stand it. But I'm probably trying to get value for him in a trade, and I'm thinking about how we're sort of tearing down to restart.
Do you have an ideal suitor under center to take over for this 1 year tank?
Well, so
nominate your guy, Will.
Is this pro Kyle Allen or pro Will Greer? Are you pro
neither?
Greer? So here's the thing. But this is, to me, a perfect excuse for
absolutely
Marty Herney or whoever this next person of because they're bringing in a new VP of football ops, right?
Yep.
You say, listen, we spent Greer was 100th overall, I believe, last year.
Yes.
So it's a top 100 pick. That's a very valuable asset. You have to know what you have. The only way to know what you have is to play him 16 games. It is eerily reminiscent, in my opinion, of Jimmy Clausen being taken in the second. Not the talent level, but
it might be.
But like, that was one of the worst offensive teams you'll ever see.
Yeah.
And you can ask Jeff Schwartz about it, like, because he was on that team, right? And he's like, man, that team, we stunk.
Stunk.
Jimmy was a second round pick. They had to see what they had in him.
I believe Marty
drafted Jimmy.
Drafted him without even meeting him. Like, he knew of his talent because they thought that whole draft process, Jimmy
Remember
was
the
supposed
trade,
to go in the first round.
But the trade was
they moved up in the second round.
But the year before, they moved up to get Everett Brown.
Right.
Right? And then they didn't have a first-round pick, so they had to move up in the second round to get Jimmy that year. Mm-hmm. And they just, like, hemorrhaging draft
assets.
I
mean, it's bad that we can't even keep track of all the bad Marty Herney trades. I mean, he traded eventually the number 33 overall pick for Armonte Edwards.
That was a bad one.
Yeah, there's a number we can go down.
I feel like that was owner-imposed.
Don't you think it's weird, though, that there has been so much change about process and that they want to build a franchise, a program with lasting success, yet they're keeping the person who, when he was fired by Jerry Richardson, worked at local radio. Yeah. No one
ESPN
hired
730,
him.
Right?
Yes,
yeah.
No one hired him and then got back in the good graces after Dave Gettleman destroyed relationships.
Yep.
And now they're just carrying him over. I know they want to hire someone as like his right-hand man.
Well,
but
no. But see, if you go back and read the statement from Tepper, it's actually weird. It's not his right-hand man.
Yeah.
It's assistant GM and VP of football ops.
Right.
So my understanding is that person would actually, Marty would actually report to that person ultimately.
Interesting.
With that person being groomed to take over the GM job. And we've seen how these things, you guys have seen how these things go in the offseason. Like, I'm not saying that Marty's going to be out after the draft. Like, I don't know. But I mean, like, I wouldn't be stunned if they made a change. I mean, it would be weird to, like, keep him around and have him in the press releases on the new coach and have him on the coaching search. But I think they might want to maybe transition him to a different role and groom this VP of football ops guy to be the eventual GM football czar type of person.
Yeah.
So, like, that's sort of – I don't think they know exactly where they're going to go. All of this just leads me to believe the Panthers probably aren't going to be very good in 2020.
That question led to a lot of Panthers talk.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But I got to be honest, I was just teeing it up to hear Philip Rivers. I was literally setting it up for you. You didn't take it.
Yep.
So now...
See, that's my whole thing is I don't think they'll sign him because I don't think they want to win six games with Philip Rivers.
Okay.
And I think that would be the worst case scenario. Hmm. I think he goes to the NFC South, though, potentially.
Tampa.
Give us the ideal landing spot. Tampa? Okay.
I think the two best landing spots for Philip Rivers are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Indianapolis Colts. Bruce Arians, like we talked about all offseason, we're like, oh, the ultimate no risk it, no biscuit quarterback is Jameis Winston. No, Philip Rivers is the perfect Carson Palmer 2.0.
Okay.
Like he people say his arm strength's diminished. I don't think he's older. I don't think it's as bad as it as people say.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring in a guy like Ronald Jones, throw some swing passes, you know, these pass catching backs, maybe trade for David Johnson too. I don't think Bruce Arians wants to deal with 5 year, like, you're going to get 5 years of Jameis Winston at like $35 million a year? That's a lot of risk. You go 2 years of Philip Rivers, that's a bridge that gets you out of the Jameis Winston sort of sunk cost to me. So I think that would fit. And then Frank Reich's his old quarterback's coach in Indianapolis.
Where did this, and I'll be honest with you, Will, where did this inception of this Philip Rivers infatuation start?
With me?
Like, yeah, take it to the top.
Why would NC State in 99?
Correct.
So I showed up at NC State and Rivers is there.
Okay.
And like, I didn't have any classes with Rivers, and I wish I'd, you know, worked with the technician so I could have, you know, covered him more there. But, like just an NC State fan who got 4 years of Phil. And he's also like a lovable Southern character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a lot of like,
the polo tie is genuine.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful Philip Rivers impersonation.
Yeah, he's like,
Yeah, you still
threw an interception. He's like, I don't know where the ball went. Like, and I'm not like he's just he'll go like 30 seconds without saying anything. He's just very energetic and passionate.
So when Phil tears up at press conferences, does Will tear up at press conferences?
I got yeah. There was a lot of emotion. Now look, if the Panthers sign him, I have multiple friends who said they'll buy season tickets.
Uh-huh.
State fans who will buy season tickets, who live in Raleigh, will drive to Charlotte to watch the Panthers. So if David Tepper's listening and he is interested,
wants your opinion.
He wants two season ticket holders from Raleigh. No, I mean, it was emotional.
I'm sure.
Like, Phil, you know, I mean, like, I just think the Chargers thing is, like, the ultimate, like, what-if scenario. Like, in 2006, Marlon McCree intercepts Tom Brady, and they're going to the AFC Championship game against a Colts team that they could absolutely have beaten. Mm-hmm. And, you know, freaking Troy Brown strips McCree. Brady gets the ball back. They win, and... Yeah, and then you end up with the Colts coming to Miami. Like, it's just, they were always so close and just always tripped over themselves.
And between Peyton, Breeze, Brady, like, he played in truly one of the greatest generations for quarterbacks.
For sure.
It was like Roddick behind Federer and Djokovic. It's just like kind of the wrong time for him to be one of the best.
Or like Phil Mickelson playing with Tiger. Like, it's, you just, and also, you look back at the trade that Archie Manning forced. Like, yeah. Good job by you, Dad. Good move by you, because Eli won two Super Bowls, right. And he's memed out to death, but he's going to the Hall of Fame easily, and Phil's like, well, I went to the AFC Championship game and played with a torn ACL because I worked for this organization that, like, you know, even with like LT, Vincent Jackson, Antonio Gates, and a great offensive line, couldn't put it all together.
We haven't asked you at all about the game on Sunday. How are we going to do that?
Okay.
Play a little game.
I love a game.
Daigle took this from a crying kid at the beach. Pick one of these, answer it, if you will, for us, and read it out loud. Finally, because this is not only a video, but it's also a podcast.
Just so you know, I'm going to steal this bit at some
point. There we go. Yeah, okay. We stole it already.
Some tourist shop on North Beach. This is a good one.
This is a good question. Who gets more airtime, Robert Saleh or Mike Shanahan?
I remember talking about this last night.
So it's an interesting question, and I think it's probably game script dependent. Uh-huh. If the defense is playing well and getting stops on third and fourth down and sacking Mahomes, it is going to be laser-locked Robert Saleh airtime.
He's got just more flexing at just, the camera.
Yes. Screaming, like just like you could see the veins popping out of his...
Handsome man.
Very handsome man, yeah. Rugged. I would not... Of like...
Cross him? You would not cross him?
No, we're not crossing him. I was just saying, like, you're at this event, and it's like dude, big dudes like Frank Clark and Chris Jones, yes, and like strong offensive linemen out there. And it's like, the scariest guy is Robert Saleh. Like, I wouldn't mess with that guy. Shanahan, if the offense is winning for the 49ers and they're running the ball effectively, and like Raheem Mostert, an undrafted free agent, is having a huge game, it'll be cut to Shanahan, like, you know, you can really see the, you know, the tendencies of his of father and son here, yes, operating. So that's a very good question. I will say it's game script dependent, but I would pick Saleh. No, I'll pick Shanahan, because I think it's gonna be a shootout.
And quickly, how do you think the game's gonna go?
I had this lingering suspicion that the 49ers are going to like be awesome in this game.
Yeah.
It's just kind of
like
there.
2 weeks to prep.
Yeah,
and figure out pieces of the Chiefs defense to attack.
Yeah, and like I don't think they're going to hold Mahomes down. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think it's going to be a fun game. Lots of points scored. I think they're going to probably have to open up Jimmy Garoppolo some in this offense and make him throw. I do think the Chiefs defense is better than people think. I think that if all the units in this game that are being rated properly, or you know, underrated, overrated, I think the Chiefs defense is getting the short in the stick.
Yeah.
Like, they're being treated like they can't stop the 49ers offense. Right. I mean, Honey Badger played a game of his life against the, you know, and against the Titans. Like, he was flying everywhere. They were stuffing Derrick Henry. I know it's a different run game. It's going to be hard to stop. I think the Chiefs can pull it off.
I'm with you. It's interesting because we talked about the Chiefs defense last year and how they were like a couple pieces away, but they added those pieces this summer. I mean,
yeah,
you talked about Frank Clark, and now you have Terrell Suggs and obviously Tyrann Mathieu. It's going to be an interesting one to watch. Will, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
Joined now by the stylish, the California living.
Oh, my God.
Matt Harmon, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing so great. It's good to be here in Miami, soaking it all. And this is my first Super Bowl. I've been doing this professionally for like 5 years. Professionally.
Yeah.
For 5 years, and this is the first time I ever actually get to come to the big game, as they call it. So I'm enjoying it.
It actually makes two of us, but Josh here is a seasoned veteran.
Pro, no, I've only been to one. I went up to Minnesota, so it's quite different.
Yeah, no kidding.
The Minnesota one was a lot of fun. We did like the roller coaster interviews with Cam Jordan and Gerald McCoy. We went ice fishing. None of that's going to happen out here.
I don't think
so. I have to wear SPS 70. We're probably all in the same boat.
I don't really like to comment on that particular part of my issues in life, but yeah.
Matt, it's great to see you, man. I haven't seen you in like 2 years.
2 years, yeah. Back in Charlotte when we did a little brewery tour there.
How's California life? I mean, not to call you out, but you know, you must have like a little style icon out there. I mean, it's, you know, you got some bracelets now, you got a couple layers on, even though it's 70 degrees outside.
I'm a sellout. Yeah, that's the thing. People have been like, you know, it's gonna be hot in Miami. Not really. Like, it'll be in the 70s. That's like kind of a little breezy, you know, like it's fine. Everything is great, man. I'm just enjoying like kind of a break from fantasy season.
I'm sure you
guys feel the same way. Yes. It is a good time to be soaking in actual playoff games that we don't have to care about, like how many routes run or where this guy light up in the slot. I'm sure you guys are like,
well, we're about to ask you about a lot of that stuff.
All right, so
don't make fun of it too much.
Ruin our few segments we have for you. No, actually, I wanted to ask. So right now, the off season, you're probably doing a few things playoffs wise, but really, what are you gearing towards?
Yeah, I mean, mostly this time of year is all building up towards reception perception for me, which is of course the methodology that I created to analyze wide receiver play, decide who are the best route runners in the NFL. Just talked to Stephon Diggs a couple minutes ago. Obviously, one of your personal faves. One of my personal faves, as he noted before we started talking, because I've told him this before. So, yeah, it's mostly gearing up towards that, and we'll have a few other things, you know, at Yahoo that I'll be involved in as well.
Yeah, as a host, I should have mentioned that you work at Yahoo Sports.
That's fine.
A fantasy analyst. did you mention to Stephon Diggs that you compared him to Curtis Samuel? Yes or no?
No, I didn't. I didn't lead with that.
Get that part out.
You might have been like, who?
Along that same path, I want to ask you this. Who do you think deserves more targets in 2020?
Who deserves more targets? I mean, look, you could go through with a lot of receivers, man. I mean, Diggs is one that I think you could put up. He mentioned that himself. I asked him, what's the thing that, you know, is most misunderstood about wide receiver play? And he's like, you know, you can be balling and just you're not getting targets. It doesn't show up on your fantasy team. I'm like, that's a pointed comment, but that's good. I like that. Curtis Samuel, I think, is another one that you can obviously point out. But look, there's a lot of good receivers out there that I think could really take that next step. Frankly, honestly, the first guy I put through reception perception was Odell Beckham.
Ever?
No. This year, for this offseason. And that's another interesting situation to monitor. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys you could go through.
Did I influence reception perception at all in terms of the alliteration, Matt? I went back, actually, through our history last night on Twitter, because you and I have a long history.
What a strange thing to do, by the way, Josh.
I know. I probably shouldn't have admitted that.
I mean, to be fair, we both did into the lobby. We were like, what do we – oh, yeah, we have
– what do we want to talk – yeah, what can we talk to Harmon about? He's such a boring guy.
The first time you ever added me on Twitter, it was this tweet. Anyone who doesn't accept purple as a studly color doesn't understand fashion, period. Do you still have that stance?
Yo, I wore like a light purple. Well, I mean, look, I work for Yahoo Sports.
So you have to be careful with purple, the colors over there now.
Yeah, it's very studly color.
How fitting. We should have. This was foreshadowing. The book was written of Matt's life.
But honestly, I wore like a purple shirt at media night last night over or under like a kind of dark jacket. I think that's a good mix. I completely hold that stance.
That was December 2nd of 2013.
Man,
that's like a lifetime ago.
That feels like forever ago.
I know, right?
How far we've come.
Daigle?
Oh, no. So we were tossing around ideas. First of all, I should say, Josh nixed my idea because I wanted to unbox with you on the table.
Oh, nice.
But we threw that aside.
That's a lot of props. It's a mess, by the way.
It's a lot of research, to be honest.
Yeah.
So we'll just go with the easy one because you are infamous for yelling at Booger via Twitter. So we are curious where it derives from. Like, you enjoy listening to him.
Yes. This isn't real.
What, you think that's not a real opinion?
No, that you enjoy Burger McFarlane on your television set. You don't, actually.
Here's the thing. You kind of have to take a step back from it because I think that football media, let me just do like a media commentary on media, which is my favorite.
You sit back and listen.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Like, I think when you look at the NFL landscape right now, we've got enough people that are teaching us stuff, that are unveiling new insights of the game. And that's what we're all trying to do, like, in our jobs. And then you've got guys on TV that have played the game that can really, like Tony Romo. Everybody talks about Tony Romo, how great he is. Well, that's great. Like, but everybody doesn't have to be that. And I think Booger brings, like, a levity to the situation. You know, something, we're just not taking the game so seriously. Honestly, like, look, the guy drew something on the screen twice in one season.
Yeah.
Twice. Like, we need some of that. The NFL takes itself a little bit too seriously. Mm-hmm. We all know
right.
that. Let me be quiet here. We got, you know, people next door. I don't know, but takes itself a little too seriously. I think Booger brings a kind of a light to the situation, and I appreciate that. I think we need a little bit of that.
So it scratches like different itches.
Yes, exactly. Like it's a funny experience to be online and like talking about some of the weird stuff he says.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was just listening to it, you know, with like my uncle or something, I don't think it would be as fun. But the fact I've got Twitter up and, you know, you can engage with different people, I'm like, can you believe he said that? I mean, again, to call back to the Diggs interview, I brought that up with him because like I've seen him, Davante Adams, Allen Robinson, like all being like, what the hell is he talking about? And that's fun because you're like, they're just like us. They're fans watching at home,
yeah,
taking it all in. I think it's a cool experience. It kind of like connects us all. And we need a little bit of that in modern society.
Something else we discussed last night. Why is it not, and we need an answer here, Matt Harmon Yahoo? It is still Matt Harmon BYB, which some people don't even know what that is.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
You have to go back.
Honestly, yeah, you got to go back. So, one, you know who the real ones are because they know what it means. It's backyard banter. Josh, back in the day, I used to actually be at Backyard Banter on Twitter way back in the day. So there's a reason, though, I never change it. One, you got to stay in touch with your roots. You got to stay grounded in who you are.
Got to know where you came from.
Got to know where you came from. And also, if you change your Twitter handle, they take that blue check away from you. I mean, you can get
it. Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
If you just straight up go in right now, change your Twitter handle, it'll take away that blue check. You can get it back if you got some connects, blah, blah, blah. But essentially, it's like, I'm sure you guys have all had some bad relationships in your life. You know, like, some people make a real bad mistake and get, like, their significant other's name tattooed on themselves. Uh-huh. I've never done that personally.
I thought you were about to tell us.
No. But it's like that, really, because it's kind of just, you can never remove it.
Yeah.
But it reminds you of where you came from and your past. And that's how the Twitter handle is, because you can't take that away unless you want to lose that blue check. And, I mean, do you really want to lose that blue check? I don't think so.
That's what it comes
status.
To.
Status.
Exactly.
We've got a few more minutes. Let's close with some football stuff.
Okay.
Obviously, I know, and you're probably pigeonholed as this wide receiver guy, but it's, you know, what you spend a lot of time doing.
Yeah. Good job.
Amari Cooper's a free agent.
Sure.
What do you think about Amari Cooper's outlook? Because he's such an interesting case study for me.
Yeah.
Because he always has had this talent, even coming out of Alabama. Yet he was with the Oakland Raiders, and it was super inconsistent. And part of that might be the offense he was playing, and part of that might be playing with Derek Carr.
Yep.
And I would say for the majority of the time, at least a full season, he's been consistent with Dak despite it being awkward at the end. Yet he might search for money. He might come back. What's kind of your perception of Amari Cooper as a player?
Yeah, so my perception of him has always been that he does have the talent. He has the ability to flash absolutely elite route running. But I think that kind of comes and goes. I think especially in Oakland, like to start off when they were kind of running him out there as an X receiver against man coverage, press coverage, you know, snap after snap, that was a problem. And then I thought it made a lot of sense. Like, actually, John Gruden, in the initial showing with Oakland, sort of moved him around, put him at flanker a little bit, which I thought was super smart. I thought that was one of the sharpest things I saw Gruden do in 2018. And then in Dallas, they continued that as well. And I thought this year he was kind of taking that next step to becoming more of a full field player. But I still think there were some inconsistencies this year. So what I would love to see from Cooper to kind of take that next step is, like, the route running ability that he flashes in spurts, do that over a 16-game stretch. Because I still don't think we've seen that yet. I thought we were going to see it at the beginning of this year.
I did
year,
too.
And then I think it kind of tailed off.
Because he had those games, like, against the Vikings when he was winning contested along the sideline.
Yes.
And then we've talked about him being able to play in the slot on the outside. But it just, like, fizzled toward the end of the year.
Yep.
And it made no sense
to that's who he has been his entire career. So I said this, I think it was on Chris Harris's podcast. I was like, this is by far the best I've ever seen him play, especially from, like, a consistent route-to-route basis, just winning throughout the game. There were some games this year where he was just, you know, in peak form, absolutely demolishing guys. And then again, it started to fade a little bit as the season went on. And at some point, I think you do just kind of have to accept maybe a guy is who he is. You know, if he moves teams this year, I think that would be even more problematic.
It makes you wonder, like, what the priorities are, because we have no idea for these players either, right? Like, do they prioritize production and fit and good quarterback play? Or are they searching for money?
Yep.
And I think that Amari, again, is going to be a case study for that.
If it weren't so consistent throughout his career, I could say we could easily attribute the injuries he had at the end of the year. But again, like you said, every single
part
year.
Of it.
Is there someone else you're looking forward to charting this offseason as well?
I think that one guy I really want to dive into is Marquise Brown from the Ravens.
Yeah.
Was a huge fan of him coming out of school. I thought he was the best route runner in last year's draft class, especially among kind of the smaller speed receivers. And I think it's unbelievable that Lamar had the efficient passing season that he did while Hollywood, like, wasn't popping for 16 games. So I want to see if some of that came to the NFL level. And obviously, you know, there were injuries there this year. That's another kind of consistent theme as well. But he's a guy who I really want to see, like, does he win from a route to route basis? Has he brought that ability to the NFL with him?
We haven't asked you anything about Sunday. How are we going to do that?
Okay.
Play a little game. You know games.
I know games.
You know hooks. Interviews just can't be the same every single time.
It can't be, you know, three chuckleheads just talking back and forth.
Why don't you reach your hand in here,
okay,
pick out a piece of paper, and answer it for us. If you can read it aloud, since this is, well,
you can use
a
scoop if you want to.
Since this is both
tougher, though,
a video and a podcast, please do that for us.
Okay. Does Patrick Mahomes attempt a no-look pass?
Aha.
Interesting.
Interesting one. Let me think. Let me run my analytical model here on this one to be able to predict this based on the weather, home road splits.
Right.
I mean, look, it's the Super Bowl. Like, got to leave it all out on the table, right? So, yeah, sure. I say he does.
How do you think the game goes?
I think it's going to be high scoring because I think these are the two best offensive play callers in the NFL. Kyle Shanahan, number one, Andy Reid, number two. And I think that they can beat you in multiple different ways. I mean, like, especially the 49ers offense, if they want to establish the run, I think they can do that. But I think the Packers, you know, it was so strange to watch them run out like a bunch of nickel defenses, like consistently put multiple defensive backs on the field when they're telegraphing. They threw eight passes in 2020. That's unbelievable. So I think what they were afraid of was that play action passing game, like beating them in the intermediate levels of the field. And I think that if you're going to target Kansas City somewhere, we know they gave up a lot of catches, not necessarily big fantasy numbers, to tight ends. I think that they can be beat in that area. I think that's if the 49ers want to go with that play action passing game in the intermediate levels, I think they can do that. And obviously, I don't know how you contain Mahomes right now with what he's doing. So I think it's going to be a high scoring game. And ultimately, I think it's going to be close, but I flip-flop a lot. I do think the 49ers win, though. And as a lifelong fan, obviously, I'm biased.
Lifelong fan since September, of course, yeah.
Since March.
March, I'm sorry, yeah.
Please, show me some respect.
You are digging into that, by the way.
Yeah, well, look, one thing I have learned...
Is brand?
Not necessarily that. One thing I've learned in media is always lean in. When you got something good going, you lean in. And that is definitely what I've done this year. I did not expect it to end up here at the Super Bowl, the team that I picked to be a lifelong fan of in 2019. But here we are.
Matt Harmon, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. I'm so glad all my old tweets could get brought up. We went through the whole thing here, man. It was a lot of fun.
Joined now by Bob Sturm. Bob Sturm is the Dallas Cowboys writer for The Athletic, and I heard the golden voice for The Ticket in Dallas.
Well, I'm certainly on there.
The
yes.
golden voice, yeah, as yes. you can tell. John Daigle's been listening to you prior to the show. I just want you to know he's been doing his homework.
He doesn't know the story, actually. Josh doesn't, that we go back. Like
way back?
Over a decade.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, there is college radio audio that exists that I did not bring with me because both of us, more importantly me, just sounds like a complete idiot. So we're not ever going to unveil it.
I mean, yeah. I would take a guess that you two weren't in college together. Was this John Daigle looking for advice out of college?
I probably, right?
It was about Dan Reeves we were talking and Stars Hockey now, which I don't even discuss whatsoever anymore.
Well, you should.
It went all over the place.
Very, very plucky little hockey team. They might do big things.
Behind the scenes, though, we're actually like 30 minutes late here today because we got bumped for Jorge Masvidal. But it's okay because Josh got to finish the Villa game. So,
Villa. Tell me about Jorge Masvidal. I mean, I obviously know that he is off a one-knee knockout.
Yeah.
He's the BMF champion. What was it like talking to him?
Oh, it's great, man. I'm a big UFC guy.
Me too.
And so Masvidal, he's risen to kind of people's champ sort of status. And the Diaz fight, the Askren fight, Darren Till before that. So he's just on this roll, which seems like it's going to culminate with maybe Connor eventually. You know, you look at the other options, Colby Covington, and they've had their falling out. So there's a lot of good fights at 170, and he is just, you know, a lot of the fighters came through like the college wrestling circuit. Mm-hmm. He came through the street fight circuit.
He was like the real Kimbo Slice.
Oh, yeah. In fact, yeah, YouTube shows him like at age 16 knocking a dude out who was Kimbo Slice's big, you know, prodigy on the streets of Miami somewhere. Yeah. So, I mean, you want to talk about the real deal.
Yeah.
And a guy with hundreds of fights, that's him.
Well, I feel like UFC on your show is like wrestling on our show. Like, I'd love to talk about it more, but my co-host like does not want to hear it.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
Let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, you're super close to that team.
Sure.
You cover it very well. It's been an eventful offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. Look, this is a team that had a plus 115 point differential last season. Myself, I won't speak for others, pointed a lot at the head coach and coaching decisions as a determining factor of this team to not make the playoffs despite as good of an offense and in some places defense.
Right.
What do you think will be the most immediate improvement of Mike McCarthy replacing Jason Garrett?
You know, the first thought would be structure. Just the basic idea that what had run its course, and both offensively and defensively at different times, it became increasingly clear that they had a fine talent reserve. And I know this is highly subjective at times when you talk about how much talent does a team have. But if they consistently seem to play below their talent level, now you're looking at coaching. Now you're looking at, are we too simple on defense? Are we too easy to play against? And on offense, are we weighting things improperly to optimize success? I mean, that's the basic idea, is you're looking for efficiency on both sides of the ball, and you're looking to put your guys in a position to succeed. And the Jason Garrett system, the Jason Garrett structure, the Jones family, and the weird personnel situation, the stability of a defense that was frankly not good enough to be that locked down and to the Rod Marinelli, we're going to run cover three, we're never going to blitz, we're going to do all these things. There was just too much predictability, and it was not the good kind. And so, you know, with the Cowboys getting in a new staff, a new way to look at things, and then ultimately a guy that I think the Jones family is more than happy to hand authority to, which is something that isn't always the case. I think that's going to be a real breath of fresh air. We'll see how long it holds.
Yeah.
But there is a feeling like this is the first actual legitimate hire since Bill Parcells.
Interesting.
Among all the changes, I was kind of shocked to see Kellen Moore stay.
Yeah.
So now, and who knows what's happening there. I've heard he's going to stick around and do play calling.
Right.
But we've also seen Mike McCarthy's play calling tenure and him not giving it up whatsoever.
Right.
So how do you think this offensive changes next year, if at all?
Well, I mean,
whose fingerprints are on it?
Great question. And I think they looked at last year and they saw, you know what, this offense was so good statistically in so many categories, it would be crazy to just nuke it and start all over again. So you don't want Dak going from Lenahan to Kellen Moore to Mike McCarthy. So they want some level of stability. The big deal, though, is you just wish you could reorganize. Would Mike McCarthy, for instance, still authorize a Zeke Elliott contract? Because once you pay that much for a running back, you've pretty much shown your cards on how your offense is going to look.
Yeah.
When he signed that pen to paper, he had handcuffs on.
Yeah.
He knows what he's dealt now.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there's obviously ways to do it. The Cowboys still, I think, have ties all the way back to the 90s Cowboys, kind of feeling like they could rebuild Emmett and that line with Zeke in this line and kind of funnel everything that way. The ability to pull that off in the modern NFL, you know, surely there's something to running offenses or run first or play action offenses. I mean, clearly we don't all think that there's no place for it, but how much? And so when you have the weapons of Cooper and Cobb and Gallup out there wide, and you have Prescott throwing the ball around, how much of that should be done? Well, yeah, but we paid this running back this much money. So it's that constant weird deal where they spent draft picks, number one picks on a guard, a center, a running back, and all these things. So they really put their eggs in that basket,
right?
Whereas the whole league, you know, we see Andy Reid. What does Andy Reid believe in? Well, pretty much the opposite of what Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones believe in. So how are we going to sort this out? Bring in Mike McCarthy and hope we can bridge that gap.
And there's another running back in Dallas too. And
yes.
His name is Tony Pollard. And it seems
he has juice.
Yeah, every single time Tony Pollard came into the game, he was electric.
Yes.
And he added something. I certainly understand not taking Zeke Elliott off the field. From your read, what did the Cowboys think of Tony Pollard heading into the season, think of him during the season, and maybe what the goal is to have him in the future?
Well, entering the season, I'm pretty sure they thought it was good insurance if Zeke were to hold out. I don't know that they ever planned on him holding out for very long, because the Cowboys don't really toe a strong negotiating line. They always pay their guys, especially if they really like him, and they love Zeke. So Pollard, when he started showing what he could do in preseason, there was an idea like, man, they got to get him on the field. They got to find a place for him. Yeah, but you just got Randall Cobb in here, and you got these three receivers, and you got Jason Witten back, and you got Zeke, and you can only put five skill guys on an offense at the same time with your quarterback. So how does Tony Pollard fit in? The fact of the matter is, you got to get your playmakers on the field. You got to find a place for them. And too many times in 2019, Tony Pollard was a spectator, especially in those road games and especially in the games the Cowboys lost. I mean, there's a correlation in almost every case. Now, Pollard was not perfect. That fumble in Philadelphia certainly didn't help things in Week 16. But overall, every time he played, good things happen, and yet they're like, yeah, but we got Zeke. And yes, you do, but you got to figure out how to use all your pieces. Once again, you go to San Francisco, you go to Kansas City, you go to these teams that find a way to have specific plans for all their talented players, and it's not every week, but most weeks they find a way to get the most of their players, and that's what they got to do with Pollard. Pollard's too good to have him watching the game.
We discussed all their free agents they have this upcoming offseason, and I would like to actually just quickly go one by one, just get your thoughts on all of them. The important ones anyway, starting with Dak, who I'm sure we're in agreement they're bringing back.
They're absolutely bringing him back, and I assume they're going to get an extension done, but I think they thought they had one week one, and it disappeared.
Amari.
Amari, I have to believe, once again, they will keep him. Now, in what fashion do they use? They have two tags this year, like everybody, and so the franchise and the transitional, and they want to get extensions done, but this is where it gets close. But I'm almost positive Amari's in the plans.
And the second half of his season, his performance, at least like started, at least left the question mark open.
Yes.
Byron Jones, because that's the one, how do we fit all these pieces in?
And I don't know how Byron Jones fits. Yeah. He's very, very good. To a point where he's going to get offers that are substantial, and you want to run a different type of defense now, and you want to emphasize takeaways, like who doesn't, and you know you want to blitz more. So does he fit, and can you pay a guy before he kind of proves he can play in your new system? Yeah. And if not, are you spending a first on a corner, and then are you just running in place? So that's an interesting one too.
We'd love to have 10 more minutes with you, but we can't. We are going to play a game before we finish. We haven't asked you at all.
It's a wacky radio bit.
Wow.
About the game on Sunday.
Yes,
so
sir.
In order to do that, I'm going to ask you to pull a piece of paper out of this.
This $8 pail. Yeah.
All right.
We got it at a tourist shop.
Yeah, one of those super tacky tourist shops that everything hiked up by
$20. Belts, by the way, I looked.
So can you read that aloud? Answer the question for us.
What happens first, guys? 49ers score points or the 49ers punt?
So how do you think the
49ers... Okay, so it's a question for me.
It is.
It's on you now.
Okay. I kind of like 49ers punt there. I kind of think that this game, and by the way, for some reason, after doing a lot of my work, and I got more work to do, but I really like the Chiefs in this one.
Do you?
And I don't know if that's where everyone's headed, and maybe that's not a very original take at all.
It's been
but
about 50-50 up here.
Is it?
So far.
Okay. You know, clearly the 49ers have proven their worth, but... But I think it's going to take them out of their personality a little bit on Sunday. And I assume that a punt it seems to be the more likely there. But in the general sense of the game, clearly the idea is for the Chiefs to put enough pressure that the 49ers get out of their offensive personality.
It's interesting. I mean, 2 weeks to prepare for Kyle Shanahan
with
an opening drive script.
Yes.
I don't know if I would put it past him to punt on that first drive. But that, I mean, if anyone's going to succeed in that moment, I think Kyle Shanahan has shown he can do that this year.
Absolutely.
Bob, thanks so much. Really appreciate you joining us.
It was a real pleasure, guys.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.